And now it's time for today's podcast. Before we begin, though, I want to let you know about a unique ebook that's yours to download free today. It's called Googling God, and in it you'll find truth-filled answers to the top five questions people ask online about God. Googling God outlines core apologetic responses to life's deepest questions, helping you know why you believe what you believe. More importantly, it will prepare you to respond with confidence and grace to questions and objections that come your way as you live and speak for Christ. Download your free copy of Googling God today by visiting premierinsight.org/resources. That's premierinsight.org/resources.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Thank you for listening to the show that brings you the thought and theology of C.S. Lewis with me, Ruth Jackson. Discover more about Lewis by visiting premierunbelievable.com, where you can also find lots of great articles, resources and podcasts. And you can also register there for the chance to win a free book. If you enjoy listening to the C.S. Lewis podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing it. But now for today's show.
I am absolutely delighted to be joined today by Dr. Philip Tallon, who is the Dean of the School of Christian Thought at Houston Christian University, as well as being the Associate Professor of Theology there. He has written and contributed to a number of books, including C.S. Lewis's Christian Apologetics, Pro and Con, and C.S. Lewis as Philosopher. So one of the lines that I think various people I've spoken to certainly seem to take issue with is incredibly famous. I'm going to read it so I don't get it wrong. But it's that God whispers to us in our pleasures, speaks in our conscience, but shouts in our pain. It is his megaphone to rouse a deaf world. And I would imagine that what many people take issue to is this sense that actually God is giving us pain. He's creating it rather than in some way it's just part of a fallen world and he lets it happen because of free will. Just that idea that actually God is himself inflicting pain on people. How do you think Lewis would have responded to that objection?
That is a famous line in the book. Maybe, I mean, the line that's been became most popular through film. There was that Shadowlands movie with Anthony Hopkins, and that you hear him giving his basically a speech from The Problem of Pain, repeating that in the context of the movie. This all comes back to bite him almost as like a bitter irony, right? When he experiences the death of his wife, Joy, and then he doesn't seem to have any settled answers to these questions within the context of the film. And that is one of the things that Beverage Lewis brings up as well. It seems like there's almost, you know, it's like Lewis is so focused on God using pain to drive us to him. Man, it's like, if this is what love looks like, maybe we just don't want somebody that God to love us. And that it is a fair representation of Lewis to cite that. He is committed to this idea that suffering is not intrinsically good, but it can be instrumentally good for the sake of driving us back to God for greater happiness, right? Only lasting happiness is going to be found in God. And so God will do whatever it takes, it seems, in order to perfect us. And so there's the analogy that's given of the great work of art, something like the Mona Lisa, that he says, imagine yourself as a living work of art. You're sentient. You are the Mona Lisa. Leonardo is carrying you all around and he's constantly painting you and scrubbing you and so forth. You might wish to have less attention, just to have been an idle sketch that's done and left alone. But it's not so with God. God is actually trying to craft us into so much more than we might otherwise be. But I think that it could be the case. And rereading The Problem of Pain, I was really struck that he does hammer on this particular point. Maybe a bit longer and without a sort of a counterbalancing view within the book, that somebody might read it and go, oh man, we're really in for a lot of suffering and pain. This still doesn't resonate with me in a certain way. However, within the context of Lewis's larger work especially, but also I think found within in certain smaller ways within the book, it's not as if pain is God's only instrument. Again, he whispers in our pleasures, right? And Lewis has a great emphasis on the all of the ways that joy and desire can lead us to God as well. That's at the, really at the heart of his autobiography, is this sort of this sense of desire that he loved experiencing, that led him into poetry and to into Norse epic and so forth, into literature, which he never found satisfied though. And so he kept looking and kept looking until he finally found the source. And so it's not simply that God uses only suffering in order to drive us back to himself. It is also the case that God calls to us through great goods. And it is all for the purpose of giving us the ultimate good. Everything good is going to be left behind or only remain as being kind of a non-ultimate element and when we're experiencing the joy of God. And so I think that the problem of pain, that might really stand out to folks, but I think with some careful reading, and especially more reading in Lewis, it helpfully balances it out.
Mm. And just to stay on this for one moment, many people argue that perhaps the soul-making theodicy may come across as pastorally insensitive. I suppose it may make sense in terms of crafting an adult and getting them closer to God. But what if we're talking about, say, the suffering of children, or you know, worse still, the death of children? I guess where would Lewis stand in terms of that? Because he seems quite strong on the soul-making side of things, even in A Grief Observed, which is a little bit more pastoral, some would argue.
But yes, I mean, it's the soul making seems to be a term that Lewis has introduced into kind of back into the literature. It comes from Keats, I think, from a letter originally, and then Hick picks it up. I think he gets it from Lewis, but then cites Keats, and it's this idea that we might find in Romans 5, which is that we rejoice in our suffering, sufferings produce character, and character produces hope, and so forth. And so I think most people would kind of understand, okay, yeah, I think I have grown through hardship. But sometimes that hardship involves others that I don't want to suffer, right? And so it, what sort of God is it that's causing my child to suffer from cancer so that I might grow? That doesn't make sense to me. And now, Here's where I think Lewis does, is at least open to the possibility, and seems so throughout his work, that God is willing to allow our suffering to then be of help to others, as it were, or uses it for that purpose, and that might be difficult, but it's part of what he affirms. But we should also remember that within the context of this book, Lewis is responding to the logical problem of evil. And so the logical problem of evil essentially says there are no reasons why a good and powerful God would allow suffering. And Lewis is saying, well, that's not true. Here are some, right? What it doesn't mean is that every instance of suffering is for that purpose, right? Or this is the reason God is allowing us to suffer. And so I would be very reluctant, and I think Lewis would be very reluctant as well, for people to read The Problem of Pain and read about soul making and then say, ah, there's the suffering. This is, God is doing this for the purposes of soul making. God has great and immense plans. And we only understand part of what is going on. And so the value of free will or soul making in theodicy is basically to overcome that strong initial objection and to give us some reasons God might allow evil in a particular instance. But it is not to say that this is the reason or why someone is suffering. There's all kinds of, actually, and this comes up in Lewis's book. It's a wide world. It's, you know, it's orderly. There's a great deal of system involved in creating a stable world in which humans interact. And so as a result, it's a complicated, complex system that God has made for humans. And so as a result, we would expect that there is that same complexity in the reasons why things happen. And we should be very wary of using particular possible reasons as being definite reasons.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
We're going to take a quick break now, but if you are enjoying today's show, please do consider rating it and leaving a review on your podcast platform so that other people can discover it too.
Before we get back to this episode, I just want to take a moment to remind you that this podcast is only possible thanks to the support of listeners like you, which makes your gift today so important. That's why, to thank you for your generous gift today, I'd like you to have a copy of a new ebook from N.T. Wright called What Do We Mean by Heaven? The Resurrection of Jesus and the Rapture. This new ebook offers profound biblical answers to questions about salvation, the resurrection, the afterlife, and the rapture. As you uncover the important answers, you'll also be encouraged and challenged to find peace and hope in the deep mysteries of life. Again, it's our thanks for your gift to help more people live as confident, informed Christians today. To give your gift and download your copy of the N.T. Wright ebook, What Do We Mean by Heaven? The Resurrection of Jesus and the Rapture, simply go to premierinsight.org/C.S. Lewis. That's premierinsight.org/C.S. Lewis. Thank you for your support.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Welcome back to the show. We would love to hear your thoughts and ideas. Do get in touch on social media at Premier Unbelievable. Now let's return to the conversation. You mentioned in the book, Christian Apologetics, Pro and Con, David O'Hara responds to some of the things that you've said, and then you respond back to him. And you mentioned that the problem of pain actually helps you to intellectually resolve the problem of evil, but that in so doing, it also helped with more than just the intellectual. Would you mind just sharing a little bit about how Lewis helped you, I suppose, both with the intellectual, but also with the kind of ramifications that that inevitably had as well?
Yeah, I do think that the head should lead the heart, you know, in ultimately, which is to say that we should attempt to conform our emotions to the things that we believe to be true. And that this has happened with me. And actually, even in this instance, I mean, I recall going through a really difficult period of my life, and deep questions about what am I doing? I was experiencing a lot of just existential suffering. I was still overall very comfortable. And at times I would imagine that, I was in a difficult place, and I would sort of imagine that God's foot, as it were, was resting on me and just kind of holding me in this spot until I grew through the process and submitted. And I found this to be a source of great comfort, actually. Like, it helped me feel God's presence in the midst of difficulty, and I felt it in other ways as well. And so I do think that there are moments when the things that we know, even about theodicy, can kind of come down and help us here personally. But when I was doing research for my PhD thesis on the problem of evil, I'm reading, you know, things and you know, I remember going home some days, I don't know how this is going to work. Maybe this doesn't work at all. Maybe there's God's not good, or he's not powerful. There's no God. There's too much. I don't know how to deal with it. And then I kept pursuing and worked through that issue. Of course, the basic fact is that evil things happen. People die, people suffer greatly. There's horrible injustice. Child suffering, there's genocide, these things happen. And so the question is there a possibility of ultimate hope after that? Is there a possibility of redemption? And only if there's a God who's good and powerful can there be that possibility for hope. And so theodicy is meant to protect. It's not there to defend our idea of God. It's to some degree there to protect that hope, that we can have in ultimate eschatological redemption while living in the midst of a world of immense suffering. And if that's not pastoral, I don't really know what is, but it can't be delivered necessarily at the graveside or someone who's not in that moment. And that's why I think it's so important for Christians to study these things before they get into the grip of immense suffering. Lewis knew all this stuff. Lewis wrote the book, and he still went through a great deal of of pain and intellectual turmoil after the death of his wife.
Was the reason that he was dealing specifically with the intellectual problem because that was what he was asked to do, or was that a decision that he made himself?
Well, I think he was asked to, as he wrote on The Problem of Pain, they wanted to deal with the intellectual problem. And he does a lot of wonderful British, qualification at the beginning.
Yeah.
I'm a layman. I'm a coward when it comes to dealing with pain. I'm wary of it. You never met somebody who is more reluctant to sort of take on danger. Of course, Lewis himself had experienced great suffering. His mother had died. He fought in the First World War, right? I mean, he's surrounded by death and suffering. He was no stranger to the real hard knocks that life can give us. And he also recognized that, he says that, when dealing with suffering, a little courage is better than a lot of understanding, and the least tincture of the love of, God is best of all. And so he understands that the intellectual answer to the problem is only one piece of what's needed in dealing with the problem of evil.
You mentioned that he talks about animal suffering, and in many ways that being quite innovative at the time. People really weren't talking about that sort of thing. And obviously he spoke about animals. He was very anti-vivisection and things like that at the time. But why does Lewis think that animals experience pain? Would you just lay out some of the reasons that he highlights in the book?
Thanks. He spends a fair amount of time. There's a lot to go into there. Of course, he does something that I think is actually quite common maneuver now, which is that we tend to anthropomorphize, when we look at animal suffering and so forth. And he says, it is very clear. I mean, animals experience pain stimulus, so he has this two types of pain. There's type A and type B. There's like just negative physical stimulus you might receive. And then there's the sort of this larger suffering that one might encounter. And so he says, seems like, animals certainly experience A-type pain. Some of the higher animals may experience B-type pain. This sort of, a dog might feel the loss of the master or suffer after being abused, and he's attentive to that. He offers some wider theology. He tries to situate it theologically, right, which is that, humans are intended to be in this sort of crowned place within creation and be like stewards and governors. And so the current levels of suffering that we see in creation, and maybe partly because of our own sin and sort of abdication of that role. And so animal pain is partly explicable because of sin, but not entirely, because he seems to think that, something like an evolutionary account is true. And so predation and death were part of creation before the fall. But he offers some possibilities. So again, this is where he doesn't explain everything, but he offers some possibilities. One is maybe there's this eschatological possibility of animals being brought into the life. So he cites John Wesley's The General Deliverance as an instance, some possibility. Maybe even certain animals can be brought into the eschaton. And so he treats it, he gives some thought to it, and I think helps to create some sort of distinguish in certain ways and include animal suffering within a theological context that is a little bit different from a traditional sort of Augustinian context, and then offers some imaginative, possibilities for redemption as well. And if you go read some of the later people who've written on animal pain and theodicy, you'll find some similarities between how Lewis handles things and how later philosophers have.
So to ask the age-old sort of kindergarten question that many, many children will ask, does Lewis think that our pets will be with us in heaven?
I don't think he, if they're talking ones, certainly, if they look on the face of Aslan with love, then they'll be there. I don't think he knows. I mean, one of the beauties of the book really is that he's able to bracket some of these speculations and say, well, here's a possibility. It's always pretty clear about where that is. And so you find these shifting levels of confidence. Okay, this I'm quite confident about. This is revealed in scripture and we trust it to be the case. I'm taking this as given. But here's some other imaginative things. I think that Yes. Would we all sentimentally be delighted? I mean, I love my dog. I would be happy to see him again after he passes. I don't think my wife would. So maybe there's some.
I think we're in a similar situation there. With my wife and with me and my husband, actually, with our dog. I guess heaven does feature quite a lot in the book, as you say, heaven and hell. So why is heaven such an important part of Lewis's theodicy here?
It's a major theme in his thought, isn't it, Ruth? Mm-hmm. I mean, he's coming back around to it so often. And it's a key part of any response to the problem of evil, I think. So John Hick, who comes later, he writes this important book, Evil, the God of Love. I think he's the one who coins this phrase, you know, no theodicy without eschatology, right? We can't respond to the problem of evil without an account of heaven, because there's just not enough in this world to really, I think, adequately make sense of how God can be good to everyone in the end, especially those who suffer so greatly. And this is scriptural, right? Paul talks about that there's this greater glory that's awaiting us, you know, that's going to comparatively overwhelm our experiences of suffering. And so Lewis wants to continually draw our eyes to heaven and to the great good that will be, and for which any difficulties that we experience here, you know, can be used. So we're going to be drawn up into eternal joy, and suffering will be either left behind or transformed in some way into a good, right? Where we then can own our own shame and yet still perfectly love God and be loved by God. And so it is so necessary in our theology to stay focused on ultimate things. I think our Christian ancestors would look very badly on us for how this worldly focused we are, right? And how concerned we are about how things go in the here and now, when they just, life was short, people suffered and were killed for their faith. And so the only sort of ultimate point of reference is going to be that blessed reward that we're going to receive. And of course, you find it all throughout Lewis's work. I mean, this is the Great Divorce and the at conclusion of the Chronicles of Narnia, and even in the Weight of Glory, right? It's not that we actually expect and want too much, it's that we want too little, right? God wants to give us more than we hope for.
Thank you for listening to the C.S. Lewis podcast with me, Ruth Jackson. Discover more about Lewis by visiting premierunbelievable.com, where you can also find lots of great articles, resources, and podcasts. And do register there for the chance to win a free book. That's premierunbelievable.com. If you enjoy listening to the C.S. Lewis podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing it. Thank you for listening, and see you next time.
L is yep, for the way that's who you think it is. The Grimace mug. The Hello Kitty keychain. Barbie herself. For a limited time, your favorite McDonald's collectibles filled with memories and magic are now on collectible cups. Get one of six when you order a collector's meal at McDonald's with your choice of a Big Mac or 10-piece McNuggets. Come get your cup while you still can. At participating McDonald's for a limited time while supplies last.